This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to another fantabulous, fergalicious episode of the Formation Lab. My name's Luke. I'm joined, as always, by Tim. Tim, how are you doing? Well put, as always. We have an exciting, exciting week of racing to recap. And I thought that, you know, Tim being as talkative as he is, we would also invite Dylan alongside us. Dylan, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. I just finished a workout. I'm still catching my breath. Pants are on, though.
Pants are on. Tim, do you want to do the honors this time and actually tell people to take their pants off? Well put, Tim. Well put. So, folks, again, if your pants are on right now, you know what to do, right? This is the hardest podcast there is, and you got to take the pants off for it, yeah, baby.
Take them off and swing them around.
Swing them around, of course, of course. So, Dylan, I got to be straight up with you. For the first year since the race began, I missed the Bomarito 500. And I will tell you all that I also went to a race that weekend. But Dylan, how was it?
It was awesome. I mean, I don't know how it looked on TV. I saw the highlights clip and it looked exciting in the highlights, but, in person, it was a freaking blast. They ran like the Highline practice session before the race. I think on Friday they ran that. It was a Saturday night race. And so the idea was to get some rubber on the top side. That way at the beginning of the race and after each caution, that, you know, people would be, you know, able to go up to the top side and make moves and whatnot. And I think it kind of worked because in both the Indy Lights race and in the IndyCar race, people were taking the high line to make passes work, usually in desperation, but it was kind of frustrating because people would hesitate to use the top side. And then when they would, it would work after a while. Like they would have to kind of work at it a little bit. And I think they would have to kind of dust it off and, you know, have to kind of work your way up, like half lane up and then 3/4 of a way up and so on. But when people were trying to like pass, they could kind of go to the high side and make things work, or at the very least get some clean air up there and get a run into the next corner. But yeah, overall it was a fantastic race. It was an enthusiast kind of race. There wasn't any destruction. There wasn't mayhem, but the Indy Lights race was one of the coolest races I've attended in person because Matthew Brabham and Linus Lundqvist, they had a duel for like 65 laps. And it was Brabham behind Lundqvist trying to get by him, and he just couldn't make it happen. And so like they would go through lap cars and stuff. And so they were, you know, the gap would grow and shrink and grow and shrink. And like, eventually though, with 4 laps to go, Brabham decided to take the high side. And like for that entire race, it was caution free. He was working on Lundqvist and trying to make it happen, trying to make it happen. His tires would get hot. He'd back off. He'd make another run at it. And then finally with 4 to go, he managed to make the top side work, got a run off the corner and passed on the high side again. So yeah, it was an awesome Indy Lights race, and the IndyCar race itself was a blast. It was a bit of a rain delay, but we survived that.
I tell you what, man, I feel like Gateway gets to be just a slightly better track every year for IndyCar. That first year, you know, we only had one or two real highlights, including the end of year highlight with the infamous dive bomb, right? Which yeah. I believe was Joseph Newgarden still.
Yes.
Which we'll get to Joseph Newgarden in a second. But I feel like every year it becomes a little more racier, a little more racier. And when I think of the ovals, I don't want to like pump it up. It's no Indy, right? And it's not what Pocono or the California Speedway was, right? Auto Club Speedway, if you're of a slightly younger age. But I feel like it ends up producing some pretty solid races. We haven't had anything spectacular, right? But I feel like we haven't had many boring races outside of 2020 when it was done in the daylight, which, I mean, I worked for the track at that time and everyone knew it was like, you know, hey, IndyCar wants 2 races. You're going to give them 2 races because you have to, right? And then but the daytime, the time schedule that they had to have, you can't race in the daytime there. Or at least you can't have
a one big, line.
It's very one line. Exactly. The hot, track's just too hot. Well, yeah. And that's why we do the night race, by the way, is because you guys down there in the summer, it's a little warm. It's a little toasty.
Fortunately, though, the weather was beautiful. It was like a high of like 85 or something.
Oh, that's and a hot granted, day around
some,
here.
Some rain ended up moving in, but like there was a nice breeze. Like we were just chilling in the sand. It was a really good time. And I think the track punches above its weight class pretty good. Like they put on a good show. It's not overly expensive. The, you know, concessions, they're not cheap, but they're far from the most expensive concessions you'll see. I mean, it just puts on a good race. And I have a good time going every year.
The crowd seems to show up there too, more so than most other ovals.
Yeah. And I think one thing that hurt the attendance a little bit, I think they said that they were on pace to match the all-time high attendance record, which was the first race in 2017.
Uh-huh.
But it became pretty obvious that it was going to rain during the race. And I think they lost a lot of the walk-up attendance, but there was still a really good crowd there, all things considered.
And don't forget too, they moved up the start time as well, which
it was an early start time to begin with. It was already beginning, I think, a half hour earlier than normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bumped it another half hour because of the rain. So we lost some of the opening ceremonies and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
We lost the opening ceremonies. Those police cars did not oil down the track this year, unfortunately.
Oh my God.
You know, that's the beautiful thing working in racing, right? Is when you're watching on TV, you're like, how can that happen? You know, like, are you serious? Like, what the heck, right? When you've worked in a racetrack long enough, and Dylan, I've told you so many stories, man. Like,
oh yeah,
you just end up saying like, well, of course that would happen. Like, why? Like, there's no such thing as a smooth, well-run day in the racing industry. It's always chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a story real quick. I have heard it through the grapevine that a series that rivals the one that I work for in drag racing. So we have announcers. We have one screen. It displays MS-DOS. Dylan, you've seen it before. It's our timing screen, right? Oh, yeah. And it has one button. And it's just a square red button and you press it. And what that does is it either resets the screen to pull up the next people, or you press it when the people are still on the line and it'll give you the current standings, right? In terms of qualification. It's a very basic system, but it's reliable. It's really all we need, right? This series comes in and the announcer is pressing their button, okay? And he's like, well, what the heck? It's not working. It's not working. In race control next to him, remember, this is a drag race. So in race control next to him, he's like, who threw the red lights on? What do we see on the track? Why are the red lights on? Right? So then red lights go off and he's like, that's really weird. Next pair rolls up. Who's turning the red lights on? My red light button in race control is not working. My override, basically my caution button, is not working. Turns out somehow the wires got crossed. So the announcer, when he's trying to cycle through information, is throwing the red lights on. And race control, when they're trying to throw a caution, is just cycling the announcer's screen.
Oh my God. What a mess. And I mean, I can picture that happening. Like, I've sat in race control with you enough times. Like, I can picture that exact thing. Like, yeah. I get it. And I can picture the race director is probably just like, oh my God, too old for this.
I've never, and you know our race director at Gateway too. I've never met a race director who is not just constantly like, oh my God, like who loves their job. They love their job. Don't get me wrong. Let me rephrase that. I've never met a race director who does not have a constant air of this shit again.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh my gosh. I could tell so many stories from race control, but I think it's neat for you because you like, as a fan, I remember the first time you experienced it and you're like, I don't know what I expected, but like just the general, like everything is going to go to hell and you're going to be okay with it because you've seen hell and you've been there before.
It's just constant putting out fires. constant. But this weekend, all things considered, I think at Gateway went pretty well. I mean, granted, they had weather to contend with and whatnot. The actual IndyCar race was a lot of fun. There wasn't any chaos, but it was still, I think, an enthusiast kind of race.
I think it was too. You mentioned the Indy Lights race, which I wasn't fortunate enough to see, but one of the Indy Lights standouts from last year, because you remember he was in kind of a three-way Duke battle, really showed off this year, and that's David Malukas coming in P2. David Malukas making that pass on Scotty Mack on, I believe it was either the last lap or the second to last lap. Coming to the white flag. You got to love what you're seeing out of David Malukas. I love that he's showing his skills on an oval, and specifically an oval the Indy Lights raced on last year, right? Because Indy Lights, they don't always race at the ovals. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, this is the only one they raced on last year. They might have done Texas, I'd have to check, but usually they only race on very few ovals. So for him to come out and be like, no, look what I can do, is a testament to like, okay, Indy Lights, you got to get your oval experience. And two, the quality of the Indy Lights drivers that are coming up are pretty darn good.
Yeah. I mean, Matthew Brabham, he's the grandson of Jack Brabham, who is a three-time F1 champion.
Yeah.
You know, so like there's some big names down there. And yeah, David Malukas, he was by far the highlight of the race. I mean, Award had some spectacular passes, like going to the high side late in the runs, like when the high side was already dirty, he was making some moves up there, and that was spectacular. And the crowd was going nuts for that. But Malukas, he was clearly the fastest car on the track. I mean, he, before the red flag came out, he was already running the leaders down. And mind you, Newgarden had half a lap lead. Like, that was one of the greatest pit strategies I've ever seen, whenever they brought some of the Penske cars in to pit during that caution. And I think the caution was for Jack Harvey hitting the wall. So they pit their cars. Most of the field stayed out, but on those fresh tires, they absolutely blew by at the field. And I think, yeah, Newgarden, he had almost a half a lap, like maybe three quarters of a lap even, lead on everybody except McLaughlin. But towards the end of that run, Malukas was starting to catch up. He was running like 2-3 tenths faster. And we were using Tim's phone because he has Spectrum. That's his phone provider. But it gets service when no one else's phones do. I have AT&T, and whenever you're in a big crowd like that, you can't get service. You'll have 5 bars and you get no service. Well, his phone's working great. So we're like watching the live timing and everything. And like, we see him running down the leaders, and then the caution comes out, then the red comes out for the rain, you know? And once that resumes, it was an absolute duel with him. And the thing is, after the race, when he got out of the car and they interviewed him, he said that had he gone to the high side sooner, he would have won the race, because he waited until the final couple of laps to like really trust that high side. And he didn't use it until he was like, well, this is all or nothing. I might as well just do a Hail Mary. Like, I'm going out, I'm coming back with my shielder on it, you know? And he went to the high side, and it worked really well. And that's how he ended up getting by McLaughlin. And had he had like 2 more laps, he would have won that race. And it's just, he was too hesitant to go to the high side earlier. But the crowd was going crazy for him. Like, you could tell that he was not going to be able to catch Newgarden, but it was still just seeing him come up through the field when he got past Award, and then when he got past McLaughlin, the crowd went crazy. But yeah, it was a really fun race to see in person. I mean, whenever you sit in turn one, like right in the entrance of turn one, and as the sun goes down, you start to see the brake rotors glowing and everything. And especially whenever somebody will make like a diving pass to the inside where they're really getting on the binders, and you can see those rotors almost turn white. It's awesome.
Yeah. Turn one at Gateway is a spectacular, spectacular place, man. It's a really, you know, we've said it before, it's a fun track in that it is egg shaped. So you have to, turn one is where all the action really concentrates itself. I think one thing I learned from the outside line is I think next year is going to be spectacular, because I think right now I don't want to be like, oh, there's always next year. But I think right now, Malukas learned to trust. And I think everyone else learned to be like, okay, next year, if you do the exact same thing, and granted, tracks can change, you know, vary a bit year to year. I think you're going to see the guys be like, all right, so it's a two-lane track now. Right. Because it was at the end of the race, and it would have been earlier in the race if, you know, Malukas had have trusted it and others would have seen that. So I think next year you might actually see kind of the identity of this track change a little bit in that it suddenly becomes a more two lane affair.
Yeah. And that was after the red flag, which washed all of the rubber off.
Right.
You know, once it rained and they dried it, all the rubber was gone and the high line still worked. I mean, yeah. So had they started to just trust it earlier, I think it would have been more beneficial. But in any case, it was a really fun race to see.
So I spent my weekend at the Brainerd International Raceway at the Lucas Oil Nationals. That's the NHRA stop in Brainerd. And not many drag strips across the United States that are massive, we'll say, right, are attached to major courses that have other uses, right? Usually it's a drag strip and it's just a drag strip. Few of them are attached to road courses. A couple of them are attached to ovals like there is in 4x Technology Raceway. Brainerd is the only one with a massive road course. And in fact, the main stretch of the road course is the drag strip. So the main straight is the drag strip. So Brainerd is unique in that it has a built-in camping area inside of the road course that is, you know, 3.2 miles around, which means that the fans get a little crazy because it's the only massive camping place. And Dylan, I got to tell you, man, one, the racing was great. But two, I think I just witnessed the drag racing equivalent of the Talladega infield, right? Like the yep. Brainerd Zoo is up there with the Tifosi at Monza, is up there with the Talladega infield. It made the snake pit look like child's play, to be quite honest with you. It was absolutely nuts.
Maybe a little bit less ecstasy use than the snake pit. But yeah, those pictures and videos you sent, like it looked like Talladega Boulevard, which is like the main road in the infield mm-hmm. at Talladega. That there's all the ridiculous stuff. That's like whenever No Gas, No Brakes, now Channel 5. Andrew, like he went and like interviewed all those people. And there's like the whole show me your butthole thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's okay. Where I think a lot of that originated was Talladega Boulevard. And but at BIR, like it looked very similar to that. It was nuts.
So one of the
burning what?
Yeah. Okay. So they have right on what is that? That'd be turn one, two, right inside of turn one of the main road course. They have what's called Camp Pallet, and they'll line up 23 pallets, stack them 23 tall. And on Thursday, which is the first day of racing, but it's not the fast stuff. It's like the local bracket racers mostly do on Thursday. So think like Indy Lights practice and qualifying on Thursday, right? They'll stack up 23 pallets in honor of the track's longtime owner, Jeb, who is a fantastic guy, I'm told. I never got the privilege to meet him. And they'll light 23 pallets on fire in a giant bleep off bonfire.
Pallets
and then
burn
what
hot
they,
too.
What? Yeah.
Pallets
yeah.
burn really hot. Like
yeah,
anyone
they do.
That ever burned a pallet, like those fuckers, they get really hot.
Yeah. And then what they do too is all of the distributors, right? If you're like a distributor of basically anything, you have a boatload of pallets that are just sitting around that have no good use. So Brainerd says, as long as you take them in here, you can dump them off here. So if you go 360 days a year, there's a giant stack of wooden pallets sitting in the road course at Brainerd, right? Well, in the zoo, when that bonfire is going, Camp Pallet is basically they make like a full bar. They pull a camper up, plop down some stuff, and they make a full bar out of it. And you walk up and you can just pick up pallets and throw it. That's the whole thing. Here's a massive bonfire. It's probably burning 25 foot tall, right? And there's the pallets over there. If you think the bonfire needs to be bigger or you just want to, because, you know, it appeals to your animal brain, go grab a pallet and throw it in the bonfire.
Just guys being dudes,
man. Meanwhile, like Led Zeppelin is blaring over the speakers. American Idiot, you know, by Green Day is playing loud enough to give you a headache. And you just grab one, haul it over your head, and just huck it into a massive bonfire. And when you get in, everyone's like, yeah, woo. And I should state too that this is one campsite of like literally thousands.
That's incredible.
Another one had like a full DJ with a foam party, like full DJ, a dunk tank. One of them was just called the living room, where they got a bunch of free furniture and they put it under a tent, and they just put some coffee tables there down, maybe a nice chaise lounge, an ottoman next to your reclining chair, a couple couches down there, and we're just going to create a nice vibe. Ooh, you brought a a lava lamp. Yeah, we'll put that bad boy right on the coffee table. Can I interest you in a coffee table book? There's the judge's bar, which again, a lot of these places literally just are bars. Like they just pull in, they put up a bar counter, and they're like, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, get your booze." The judge's bar, and the cool thing too is that all because it's such a rarity at a drag. I've never seen anything like it at a drag strip. That kind of fan involvement. Usually a drag strip is you come in, very few of them camp out, similar to like an F1 race where it's like there's not a ton of campers there, right? You go in, you see the show, you go back home, and you drive back the next day from your hotel, from your house, and you watch it again. Because there's so many campers, like the drivers are out amongst the crowd. So like at like the rave one where there was fireworks going on, there's like a DJ out there, they're shooting bubbles and foam out. They had these big glow sticks, and I turned, I'm like, "Oh, hey, that's Steve Torrance, who is a top fuel dragster racer." And I handed one to him, and he's like, "Yeah, man, nice." I then had to interview him because he ended up winning the whole dang thing on Sunday. And he's like, "You're the one who handed me the glow stick." And I was like, "Yeah."
That's great.
I gotta hit one other thing, by the way. Redneck Engineering at its finest there. So it's a campground, so people will just cruise around it in, you know, 4x4s and golf carts, but no, you can bring in any vehicle if you want to just haul it in, right? So we're talking old like Ford Pintos turned into giant pirate ships that Don Schumacher Racing is standing on top of, throwing beads off of. We're talking like little schooners, boats that were like attached to three wheels, and they'll just drive the schooner around the campgrounds. Motorized toilet. Well, it's a motorized bathtub, and the like seat that you would be driving it on is a toilet.
Motorized bathroom, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Got everything you need.
It really does. You can poop, and there's a bathtub. And they're all just driving around. They have a blender that's hooked up to a 11,000 horsepower nitromethane burning engine.
Yeah, that's necessary.
Yeah, of course. And they'll give you a free drink. They'll make they got three blenders put in there. They start up the engine, and it blends up your drinks, and they're like, "All right, who wants booze, baby? We're just taking donations, is all."
Good Lord. That's necessary.
Dylan, this is up your alley, my dude.
Oh yeah, I love that. I love racing, and I love chaos, and I love meeting inebriated people. That's my favorite things, you know?
Dylan, you got to come up here next year.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, right. Now that I know it, that's a thing. Like, it's kind of like the Talladega experience without being in Alabama, you know?
Yeah. Instead of being in Alabama, it's 77 degrees, sunny, and it's a bunch of Minnesotans.
And it's not Alabama, you know?
that's the most important.
To anyone listening that wants to know what it's like to be in Alabama, go into your bathtub, pee in the bathtub, and then get in there with the pee. And that's Alabama.
Yeah. Make sure, by the way, to like put the water on, like turn your bath. First off, you know, turn the water on as hot as you possibly can. Do not turn a fan on. And then once it's like hot and steamy, then you pee in the bathtub, because you have to simulate the Alabama humidity.
Yes. And then get in with it.
Yep. And then get in with it. And that's what it's like to be in Alabama.
Beautiful.
And poetry. Then while you're naked, to get the thorough Alabama experience, start thinking of your cousin.
Oh, I knew that was going there. I was hoping you wouldn't, but I knew it was.
But anyway, so it was a good weekend for me. Great weekend for Dylan. We were both at races, so you know, we're talking about the in-person experience. And Dylan, the in-person experience at Gateway is always fun because I'll be darned, and props to Worldwide Technology Raceway, the organizers, John Bomarito, Curtis Francois, everyone. They always seem to find themselves right in the heat of the championship swing. Yep. Because of that beautiful late August date. And I'll be darned if the championship isn't heating up. Will Power leads your championship with 482 points. Joseph Newgarden closes the gap to just 3 points in second place. And then Scott Dixon does not fall far behind, just 11 points behind Joseph Newgarden. In fact, you can go all the way down to fifth place with Alex Palou. And that is a 50-point gap between Power and Palou. Well, it's actually 42 points. 47 points. 43 points. Gosh dang it, I can't do math. 43 points separate Power and Palou in the top five, right? And if you're curious, because we go over it every year, because the IndyCar point system is not as simple as Formula One's, a race win is 50 points. And then a DNF is 5 points. So that's a 45-point gap. And then you get another point for pull, and then another point for leading a lap, and 2 points for leading the most laps, right? So if you qualified pull and won a race, okay, you would get 52 points. And if you led the most laps, you would get 54 points. All right. So a thorough domination is 54 points. And then if your guy DNFs, that they get 5 points, right? Because you get 5 points through 33rd. Basically, what I'm saying is that if Will Power DNF'd, Alex Palou could jump the leader from fifth. That's how tight we are right now. It's a very tight window moving into the last two races. And Dylan, we talked a bit before the show. This kind of reeks of Scott Dixon being Scott Dixon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's going to sneak in there. And everyone else is going to have some unfortunate luck, and he's going to just do Scott Dixon things and end up winning it all. He might not even win another race this year, but he'll end up just walking into that.
Walking into a title. He's at 468 points to Will Power's 482. And I would be ecstatic to see Will Power get another championship. I wouldn't mind seeing Joseph Newgarden get another championship. Scott Dixon, I've gone from fearing another championship to being like, you know what? It's a bit like watching Albert Pujols chase 700. It's just like, add to the legacy, baby. What do I care? I can almost see Will Power getting in a tangle with Joseph Newgarden at Portland International Raceway in the chicane. All right. You know, the one where
I'd love that drama. That'd be wild.
Tangles up every year. And then guess who pops out of the absolute carnage? There's like 40 cars involved, even though there's 28 on track. Except for one, it's Scott Dixon pulling out of a massive cloud of dust but a speck of paint gone from his car.
And he's done it before.
He's done it before. Is it bad that I can see the script? Like, I know how this is going to go.
Yep.
How about
he's
Mark?
He's just that good.
He's that good. He really does run the fine line of luck versus skill. Because if
it's
he did it,
constant preparation, though, like they're able to capitalize on every little misfortune that happens to anybody. They just capitalize on it. And it's annoying because he's just so smooth that he doesn't come across as being like the fastest guy, but he is one of the fastest guys. It's just his driving style is so smooth. And like the way that like his approach and the whole approach of the team is so consistent and good that it's not flashy. And so it feels like he just walks into these things, but it's the constant preparation that they do. It's annoying.
It's a little annoying. You want to hate Scott Dixon, but you really can't because he's a nice guy and he's that talented. And there's a thing too, where it's like when it happens once or twice to a driver, you're like, man, what a lucky break. But you talk about Scott Dixon getting extremely lucky and lucking his way into something like five or six times a year, which is the whole basis for all of his championships. It's like at a certain point, man, like You got to be smart to realize when you can be lucky. And that's really what he does. Dylan, I'm looking through here. All right. I'm seeing, oh, look, Alex Palou, Pato O'Ward. I'm seeing McLaren. I'm seeing Felix Rosenqvist. I'm seeing an absolute disaster class of whatever the heck McLaren is doing. And there's been some developments today on Wednesday in the McLaren drama.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on there either. So they've deleted their social media posts announcing that Palou is joining the Arrow McLaren SP team. And then they have announced that Daniel Ricciardo will not be returning in 2023. So this is it for the end. This is it for him at McLaren. It's unknown where he's going to go next or if it will be an F1 at all. So yeah, and Palou, I guess maybe he returns to Ganassi. Maybe he doesn't return at all. But it's becoming more likely that he's not going to return to Arrow McLaren SP. So I guess that leaves Rosenqvist, O'Ward, and Rossi as the three drivers in their stable. Yeah, wild.
It is wild. This is Zach Brown kind of overplaying his hand, I think, because it's not, I feel bad for Felix Rosenqvist because it was made explicitly clear throughout all this that they don't want him. Despite him ranking eighth in the points, I mean, you look at the drivers that are behind him this year, Rossi, Herta, which, I mean, it's Colton Herta.
Dumpster fire of a team too.
Right. Yeah.
Andretti Autosport. They're not great right now. So Rossi and Herta.
Yeah. Grosjean, Pagenaud, Ray Hall, Christian Lundgaard, David Malukas. I mean, you're talking some decent drivers that are behind Felix Rosenqvist. And yet, I can't help but feel like Zach Brown almost was using drivers.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure one day we'll kind of know a little bit more about what happened. If it was they got bad legal advice and thought that they could just take Palou or what. I mean, they were within their full rights to re-sign Rosenqvist to the McLaren pipeline and say, okay, well, maybe it's going to be Formula E. Maybe it's going to be IndyCar. We don't really know. That's fine. I mean, because they renewed him, like his contract was going to be up and like they extended him. So like they threw him a bone, you know, they could have just completely dropped him. But I don't know what's going on with the whole Palou situation. It's weird.
It do be just a little bizarre. We also talked about Daniel Ricciardo. This will be it for him at McLaren Racing. He will exit at the end of 2022. News today, courtesy of Motorsport Magazine, was that he was offered an IndyCar ride before he agreed to an F1 exit with McLaren. So I would think Ricciardo has somewhere lined up next year in F1. He's not retiring. And again, they offered him an IndyCar ride. So if he turned down a McLaren IndyCar ride, you got to think it's pretty much done. The one thing I will say is I could see him being like, you guys aren't faithful with me. I don't want to be with McLaren on the other side of the pond. But when one of the number one, the arguable number two team in IndyCar offers you a ride, don't just say no to that unless you really don't want to go to IndyCar and or you have an F1 seat lined up.
Right. Yeah. I wish he'd come to IndyCar, but yeah, hopefully he's still serviceable. So I think he still has hope to be able to be on a team. And there's a talented driver there. It's just deep down, I think he'd be more successful at F1, but I don't know. On to Spa, I guess, which is this weekend.
Right. Hopefully this weekend's race ends up a little better than last year's.
Yeah.
By that, I mean, like they complete one lap. That would be nice. That'd be cool.
Last thing I want to bring up, NASCAR, baby. Tim and I brought it up last weekend. Kimmy was in the NASCAR race.
Kimmy was in the NASCAR race. And I'm looking at our timer, by the way. We got to take a break and we will be right back at the other side of things. We'll talk about Kimmy in the NASCAR race and a major upgrade to one of the IndyCar teams coming up. It's the Formation Lap in the Not 101 ESPN studios.
The Formation Lap. The Formation Lap.
Welcome back to the Formation Lap from the Not 101 ESPN studios. Again, I'd like to apologize formally to Dylan for cutting you off right there, but we had about 3 minutes and I was like, we're not going to be able to talk about Kimmy in 3 minutes. Are you kidding me? So Kimmy was at Watkins Glen this weekend and you watched. I did not get the opportunity to. Again, I was at races for 4 straight days.
Yeah, so I watched basically exclusively to see Kimmy. There were some highs and some lows. Unfortunately, his race ended early. It's really challenging to go into a full-bodied stock car. I mean, even with the next-gen car that has larger brakes, better IRS suspension, better steering, a sequential transmission, you know, it's still really hard to go from the world of open wheel racing to that, but he still did really good. Watkins Glen's a great track that allows the stock cars to kind of flow and keep a lot of momentum up. He had some good moments in practice where he was, you know, towards the top half of the leaderboard, and he seemed to like continue to improve every single session. And then throughout the race, like at one point he was in the top 10. Part of that was because of how the pit stops cycled out, but yeah, he was kind of in the top 10 for a little while. He shuffled around. He was making passes. He was, I mean, just trying to stay out of trouble. And then there was a wreck ahead of him and some cars shuffled up. So the Watkins Glen has a chicane on the backstretch. I guess you call it the backstretch, but there was like a big shuffle up coming out of that. And it just so happened that he got bumped and you could almost tell that the steering wheel came out of his hand when he got hit, because the car just like, he got hit hard on the right side and just went straight into the barrier. And it was just enough of a hit to end the day. So that was a bummer, but it was crazy because he gave like the most talkative interviews I've ever heard from Kimmy during his like NASCAR interviews. Like he was very open about things and he was, you know, and they asked him like, of course, like the true Kimmy came out whenever they're like, would you like to come back for this? And he's like, I don't know. If the opportunity came up, maybe we'll see. So it was just a nothing answer. But yeah, he was very talkative. I think he had a fun time. But
I think he did too. I'd like to see him try IndyCar just once. And I know he'll never do a full time race, but I think he's going to be the what Fernando Alonso was for a few years there, where it's just like, that looks fun. I'll do that. I'll do Dakar. I'll sober up for Dakar, right? Like, I wouldn't be shocked for Kimmy to do like a Long Beach.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I don't know if he'll do a 500. I don't know. I don't know if Mintu will let him do a 500, to be honest with you, though.
Yeah. F1, really European drivers are not too fond of the 500. They tend to see the dangerous side of it a little.
Yeah. They respect it, but they fear it in a way that they don't fear a lot of other races, which, to be fair, I mean, it's not like the 500 is the most safe race out there, but it's not nearly as dangerous as you might assume it is based off of the speed and the proximity to the walls and the margin for error. I mean, those Indy cars are pound for pound safer than what you'd be driving around in F1, dare I say.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood, right? So, in other news, and this applies to both the F1 and IndyCar, Andretti have announced plans in Caramel, Indiana, or Fishers, my bad, not Caramel, in Fishers, Indiana, that's on the northeast side of Indianapolis, if my geographic map serves me right. Northeast side of Indianapolis, a $200 million headquarters, 575,000 square foot shop, 90-acre facility. And it looks spectacular. It looks a lot like, honestly, quite a bit like the McLaren headquarters. But I think this is a statement of intent from Andretti. Are you reading into this? Because I'm reading into this.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. I mean, hopefully at the very minimum, it means they're going to get their shit together on the IndyCar side of things. But I could see it kind of, you know, saying like, look, we can, we'll build this fancy new facility. This will be a true American F1 team. They'll be headquartered here. We're going to expand our resources and we're going to be capable of going racing in Formula One.
So here's the quote says, Andretti's global commercial functions and the base of operations for the team's current NTT IndyCar series, Indy Lights, and IMSA programs and other future racing initiatives. In addition to housing day-to-day operations for the full racing team, the building will be home to advanced research and development of Andretti technologies and will house a museum for Andretti Autosport and the Andretti family. And it should be good to go by early 2026, which I think if they got a team okayed right now, would be the earliest they could possibly do it. They're not going to be able to do it in the next couple of years. I think it is a statement, and I don't think I've asked you this. I think Andretti would be, I think people who poo-poo Andretti are kind of being short-sighted about what they could possibly do in F1.
Yeah, I think they would be able to get the right people together. And the Andretti name is certainly pretty, you know, it's big, especially whenever you couple that with an international sport like Formula One. I think sponsors would really jump on that opportunity. And I think they'd be fine financially. I think they wouldn't have a problem getting enough money in there. Granted, the Andretti family themselves are not as crazy rich as like Gene Haas, but right. You know, they have like Gamebridge and like all these big sponsors that back their IndyCar team. And I think they would get way more if they went the international route.
I think they would nuke Williams, to be honest, where Williams is right now. And people bring up, they're like, we don't want another Haas. And I'm like, they won't be. Well, they might be another Haas, but people forget that Haas punted on the 2019 or the 2020 car, right? They were like, you know what, this car, we're focusing on the next era of regulations. And then that ended up having to serve them for basically like two straight years. Right. Yeah. When Haas started, Haas was a very decent midfield team and almost won best of the rest.
Right.
It was going toe to toe with Renault, actually the big mighty Renault. I feel like that can be what Andretti is. I really do think Andretti can sneak their way into fourth in the Constructors' Championship if you just let them roll.
Absolutely.
And it's not like they're taking a spot away from Porsche or Audi or Volkswagen, Toyota, Ford, right? First off, Toyota and Ford have been kind of jokes of F1 teams, to be quite honest with you. But it's like Porsche is not just joining a new team. They're going to buy a team. That's what they're doing with Red Bull. Why not? I really don't understand why not.
The chaos reign, baby.
I know, right? I will say too, Andretti, we bitch and moan about Andretti strategizing and their kind of shit show of an IndyCar team right now. That doesn't particularly mean that they'd be a terrible F1 team, or they wouldn't be committed to F1. I mean, what? Are we pretending that Ferrari is not an absolute shit show every fucking week?
Like, yeah, they're basically just the equivalent of Ferrari, to be honest. I mean,
that's actually a very apt analogy, right? Should be a top tier team. Should probably have a couple more championships, but they continually fuck things up. Do we not love Ferrari for that? Come on. Yeah, here, I'll go one step further. I think Andretti have been more recently successful than Ferrari.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, think about it. They won what, the 2012? I think they won the 2012 Drivers' Championship and like three Indy 500s in the last decade.
Wasn't it 2014 with RHR?
Ooh, it might have been RHR. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Will Power 2014. Oh, but yeah. Ryan and Ray was
2012.
Right.
But no, like they've won more recent championships that have won the 500, which is like the big race in IndyCar, of course.
You're right, 2012. I'm just a big old idiot.
Look at that. But they've won the championship and the big race in IndyCar more than Ferrari have won mega prestigious races and championships. So I don't know. Dylan, is Andretti a more successful team in their series recently than Ferrari is in their series?
I would say so, yeah. Especially whenever you compare the expectations and the potential.
Yeah.
Like, they've executed on their potential way better than Ferrari has.
Which is not to say that they're a well, like, organized team, especially in the current day, but like, have we seen Ferrari, guys? Yep. Let's not pretend like every F1 team is a well-run. Not even Ferrari, man. Haas was pretty bad there for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, and Aston Martin right now.
Yeah. But no, yeah, we can't let Andretti in. We have to keep that open for other respectable teams that are well-run, like Aston Martin and Williams circa 2019, 2020.
Right.
Oh, man. Just pinnacle of great racing teams. I shouldn't harp on Williams like that. Poor guys. I think, Dylan, do you have anything else you wanna cover? Or I think
that's
about it, to be honest.
I would say just be careful what we all ask for whenever we pray for a rain race, especially as we're coming up to Spa, because that bit us last time. It was a real monkey's paw moment. So hopefully,
yeah,
I would love to see just a dry weekend at Spa.
that would be great. I want a good race at Spa. And I know that it goes without saying, but I'm really starting to feel the effects of, like, how long has it been since we've had a truly great Spa race?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's been a hot second. All right. Well, until next week, I'm Luke. I've been joined, as always, by Dylan. Tim is, Tim, what did you think of that episode? Oh, yeah. Good point. No,
why is
it? You can't say that. Why would you say that? It's literally illegal for you to say that. I'm not saying that, all right? I'm not putting that out, all right? I'm removing you from this entire episode.